Everybody, it's good to be here, and thank you to the team for leading us in worship this morning, which was, it was great. It's what an opportunity it is each week just to be together and worship. And we come, here we go. We do this every week. We test it all, and then it suddenly, as soon as I start speaking, it switches off. You think there's a message there? I'll see how we go. Worship can be, as we have done this morning, it's verbal. We're thanking God. We're recognizing God's work in our lives. We're recognizing actually who God is, that He is God, and we can worship Him. We can worship Him quietly, reflectively, which we can do individually. We can do that. Sometimes we will sit and just reflect on who God is as part of our service, and that's a different kind of worship. I think the worship that God really wants is the worship of our heart, the worship of everyday living, the worship of putting Him first, no matter what we're facing in life. To generate through our life, worship Him. Okay. It might be the Holy Spirit, you never know. So we're going to look at this morning at one of the reasons why we do worship God, and that's His sacrifice. We are coming up to Easter. I don't know whether you noticed that. If you're looking for Easter eggs in the supermarkets, it started about 6 or 7 or 8, 9 weeks ago. And some churches, some believers sort of have a pre-Easter period called Lent, where they will focus their attention on the sacrifice of Christ by giving something up, by doing something, by pledging something that they're going to do for 40 days. I think there is some value in that. But one of the questions that was in my mind when I was growing up, when I was a child, and one of the things that people often will say to you in discussion about Easter is, why did Jesus have to die? From the outside, it looks like a complete failure. Why did He have to die? We recognize He was a good man, but why did He have to die? See, we see death as an ending, as a sign of failure, but certainly little victory in death. That's our kind of worldview of death. It's the end, and we pay the price of life with death. Scripture teaches us that death came into the world through Adam and Eve, and it was a consequence of their sin, their failure in the Garden of Eden. They gave into the temptation of Satan, and that single act changed the relationship of God and man forever. And so we're right back to the start of humanity here, and I just want to reflect on that for a moment. What I'm saying this morning, there are many studies that we could look at, but I'm just going to touch on one or two just to encourage our thought processes, to help us to really understand the whole process of why Jesus had to die. So Adam and Eve were separated from God, and if you read the story, you'll see what happened. They had this relationship with God where they knew Him intimately and personally, and they would talk to Him. It says in the cool of the evening they would talk to God. And it was like just another person in their relationship. He provided everything for them. Not just physically, as in food and water and shelter, but emotionally and spiritually, He provided everything that they needed. And that's quite difficult for us to understand because we've never been in that position. But they would never have felt fear. They would never have felt concern or anxiety or worry. Why? Because God gave them everything that they needed. He provided all their requirements. Everything. What a relationship that would have been. But in that one single act where they ate the fruit that they shouldn't have done, that relationship was broken forever. And it's hard to understand why, how something that somebody else did thousands of years ago still invades our lives today. suppose when we talk about sin, it's not a very popular word because nobody likes to be called a sinner. We don't think of ourselves as somebody who carries that name around with them. It leaves a nasty taste in our mouths, doesn't it? But the Bible tells us that we have all sinned. We are all sinners. It's part of our humanity. It's something we're born with. It's not our fault, but we can trace it back to that act of Adam and Eve. And from that moment on, sin became a reality in all of our lives. It's almost like a genetic. You know, you may know people who've got genetic issues. Something they're born with, it's not their fault, but they carry that weight with them all through their lives and impacts the way they live. And it's very similar to sin. It's not our fault, but it's part of who we are, and it impacts. Microphone. We're living life, and God made a way for them to deal with the sin element that we're talking about. And it was always through the sacrifice of an animal, a blood sacrifice, both for the individuals and for the nation. Forgiveness of sin came through the death of an unblemished animal. Not one with three legs that you don't really want, but they would search very carefully for the best animal, the unblemished animal, as a sacrifice for sin. And as we read through the Bible, we can see that sin dominates the lives of those who lived. It dominates our lives, whether we believe it or not. Sin separates us from God, whether we believe it or not. And there has to be a sacrifice for sin, whether we believe it or not. The Bible tells us that is the truth of our relationship with God before we become believers. See, I really strongly believe that sin is more than an act. The acts that we do, the sin acts, the getting it wrong, the being disobedient, the flaws that we see in our human nature are the product of the power of sin that drives us to destruction. And we see it every day in our lives. And you may experience things, you think, why have I done that? Why have I said that? Why have I thought that? It's because there is a power greater than you that it is at work in this world. You see, the Bible teaches us that if we could have overcome the power of sin, Christ wouldn't have had to die for us. There will be no Easter story because we will be living a life overcoming sin in our own strength. But that isn't the case. I don't know anybody who's ever done that. So we have the story of Jesus, who was born both human and God, and he grew up from being a boy to a man, realizing that his mission was to take the sin of the world on his shoulders. His teaching as a boy would have reminded him of the prophetic words in the Old Testament regarding a Messiah and how he would pay for the sins of the world. The conversations he had with his disciples, the interaction with the religious leaders, show a deep understanding of he knew he was going to die. It didn't come as a surprise to him. It was his mission on earth. But he knew also that there was a resurrection to follow. I just want to read from Isaiah 53, which is a very well-known scripture. Who has believed our message? You have to excuse me, I've got a cough sweet in my mouth. And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, and like a root out of the dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we consider him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. It's the Easter story, isn't it? The culmination of the prophecy and Jesus' mission. We're coming together at the Feast of the Passover, and we see the unfolding of the last few weeks in the life of Jesus as beginning to fulfill the prophecies that we read of in the Old Testament. As I've said already, this was no surprise to Jesus. And on a number of occasions, he told his disciples what was going to happen. And he told the Jewish leaders what was going to happen. But almost like they had their fingers in their ears because they just didn't catch what he was saying. But to Jesus, this was no surprise. And what I'm trying to do this morning is help us understand what Jesus went through and what he did for each of us. The conflict he faced and the weight of God's plan now on his shoulders and the human element of Jesus' makeup. Mark 14, we read, "Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus and secretly kill him. But during the festival, they said, but not during the festival, they said, or the people may riot." So we see here the religious leaders plotting the death of Jesus. It was planned out of anger and frustration. The Jewish leaders, the religious leaders, were offended at what Jesus had been teaching. I'm particularly frustrated with the public criticism by Jesus of the way they conducted themselves, taking advantage of their position. They didn't like Jesus very much, and they wanted him dead. Jesus had ridden into Jerusalem on a donkey and was welcomed by the crowd as the coming Messiah. That's where we get Palm Sunday from. The people recognized something was different about Jesus. They recognized he was a Messiah, but not the Messiah they were looking for, but a Messiah that was bringing a different kingdom to pass on earth. He was coming to his death, and he wanted to spend his last days celebrating the Passover with his mates, that is the disciples. You know, Jesus had a really close relationship with them, and he wanted to spend these last few days with them, just being around his friends. At the meal that they share together, the Last Supper as it's called, Jesus already knew that he was going to be betrayed by Judas. Judas was identified and left the room and betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. During the meal, Jesus took the opportunity once again to teach the disciples about this new covenant, about this new kingdom that he was talking about. And he used the Passover meal that they were so familiar with to reveal the significance of what was about to happen. The bread Jesus described as his body, and the wine as his blood. Something that reminds us of the sacrifice of Jesus, and something that we continue to this day. because it reminds us, it brings us back to the moment of his sacrifice, without which we wouldn't have been set free from the power of sin. From the Passover meal, Jesus took his disciples to the Garden of Gethsemane, and there he sat them down. Jesus wanted his disciples to be close to him as he faced the biggest challenge of his ministry on earth. It gives something away about the humanity of Christ, doesn't it? That he wanted to be with his friends. He knew what was coming, and he just wanted their support in this last moment of his life. He sat his disciples down and went with Peter, James, and John a little further into the garden, and then he left them and walked a little further on his own. It says in the world, it was noticed that he began to be troubled and deeply distressed, and he said to the three, "My soul is sorrowful even to death." This is a revelation of the weight of this moment, and it's expressed through the humanity of Christ. This wasn't an easy trip for Jesus. It wasn't something that he just got on with and did without any pain, without any suffering. And Jesus expressed three times, "Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. If it's possible, is there any way around this situation? Is there a way that we can deal with this sin without what's happening right now? But not my will, but your will." It's easy to think that Jesus was referring to the torture and death he was about to face. If you want to know about the brutality of the cross, you can do some reading, but it was really unpleasant, incredibly painful and tortured, Jesus. Any of us facing that kind of situation, that kind of death, I'm sure, will be saying the same things as Jesus did. We will be deeply troubled and filled with anguish. It's not something that any of us would want to face. And Jesus knew what was coming. He would have witnessed that, being part of a Roman-occupied nation. This was quite a common event, to see people crucified. And it's enough to ask for this to be removed from me. If it's possible, take this away. But as I've just been reflecting on the pain of Jesus, there's a second aspect to the anguish and distress that Jesus experienced as he faced the biggest spiritual battle he would ever face. 2 Corinthians 5:21 says this, "God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God." Jesus had not experienced sin. He had never sinned. And he was going to experience sin in the extreme in the next few moments in the garden. Isaiah 53 reminds us that he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. I believe this is the crux, this is the center of the issue that Jesus was facing, the crushing weight of the sin of the world on his shoulders. He would bear all the sin of the world, past, present, and future. Amazing. It's no wonder he felt crushed. It's no wonder it was overwhelming. But someone had to defeat sin, and this someone was Jesus, who faced this alone, knowing the consequences of failure. Have you ever done something where there is a weight of responsibility on your shoulders and you know if you fail, it's all over? It's massive. I believe this was the real weight that Jesus was carrying, the weight of the sin of the world, and knowing that it was on him, that if he failed, the earth would continue in the power of sin. A world dominated by sin without any hope of defeating it. No future, no connection with God, no access to the love and grace of God. A lost world. And Jesus was feeling isolation from the Father, and he felt the full crushing power of the sin of the world on his shoulders. The Bible doesn't say this, but there would have been a huge spiritual battle with Satan, and his demons would be pressing him on all sides, using every force that they had for Jesus to fail. We can't imagine that, really, the weight of what was going on there. It was a huge spiritual battle. And it's not surprising that in this moment, he asked for this cup to pass from him. But he always said, not my will, but yours. Jesus' heart was revealed. It says this in Hebrews 12, and I've not given this to the desk. If we ever become discouraged in our Christian walk, fix your eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. See, when Jesus was facing that spiritual battle, when he was facing not only the physical death, but the possibility that spiritually the world will be destroyed forever, he went through it because he saw you and he saw me set free from the power of sin, and it filled him with joy. And this morning we can gather together, we can worship, we can celebrate the fact that Jesus went through what he went through because it filled his heart with joy. And so this morning, as we reflect on the world, obviously we'll talk about the resurrection at Easter, but it's important for us to realize that what Jesus went through for each of us here, the crushing weight that he bore, but for the joy of seeing us set free from the power and sin, he endured the cross and the shame of the cross for each of us. Just reflect on that over the next couple of weeks as we approach Easter, and let's celebrate his resurrection together. Thank you.